The Bush administration has imposed sweeping new sanctions against Iran. The new sanctions announced on Thursday, October 25th, by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson are the harshest imposed by the U.S. on Iran since 1979. The sanctions include measures aimed at isolating three Iranian state-owned banks and more than 20 Iranian entities, including individuals and companies, for Tehran's alleged support of terrorism and nuclear weapons ambitions. Condoleezza Rice, who also noted Iran's anti-Israel stance, said the moves were part of, quote, a comprehensive policy to confront the threatening behavior of the Iranians, unquote, but that Washington remains committed to, quote, a diplomatic solution. Rice and Paulson stressed that offers for negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program remain on the table and that the sanctions are not a sign of imminent military action. Robert Byrd, Democrat, West Virginia, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, said the new sanctions smack of, quote, chest pounding that preceded the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq and raise, quote, the specter of an intensified effort to make the case for an invasion of Iran. And Senator Christopher Dodd, Democrat, Connecticut, said, I am deeply concerned that once again the president is opting for military action as a first resort. In Tehran, the Guard's chief, General Mohammad Ali Jafari, shrugged off increased U.S. pressure on the force. He said, today the enemy has concentrated sharp point of its attack on the Guards. Jafari told a military ceremony in east of Tehran, according to state news agency IRNA. They have applied all their efforts to reduce the efficiency of this revolutionary body. Now, as always, the Corps is ready to defend the ideals of the revolution more than ever before. And joining me on the phone to talk about these new sanctions imposed by the Bush administration on Thursday is Stephen Shalom, professor of political science at William Patterson University in New Jersey, and author of several books, including a text, Which Side Are You On? An Intro to Politics. He's also a frequent contributor to Z Magazine and ZNet. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Thanks for joining me. So first off, what in your view is the goal of the Bush administration with these new sanctions?
Well, the Bush administration has been blocked in the Security Council from achieving a tough set of sanctions against Iran. And so in the standard practice of the Bush administration, you try for a little while for some kind of multilateral action, and when that doesn't work, you go the unilateral route. And that's what's happening here. But what's striking is that, in fact, this is not a case where sanctions have any conceivably legitimate purpose. That is, there are two issues that are often mentioned. One is the nuclear issue, and the other is the terrorism issue. On the nuclear question, there's been no demonstration by anyone that Iran has done anything illegal. There are calls, appropriate calls, for closer inspections, and there are certainly suspicions about what Iran is doing. Frankly, you know, if you ask me, do I think Iran is up to no good with respect to nuclear weapon development? I would say, you know, given their situation, they'd probably be crazy not to. Not that I think they ought to, but given that they've got the world's largest superpower threatening them, continually talking about, you know, various scenarios for airstrikes and so on, and given that they've got a very aggressive neighbor, Israel, that already has nuclear weapons and is also talking constantly about possibilities of airstrikes on Iran, Iranian officials might well think that the way to deter any sort of attack is to actually have some weapon that gives them puts them in a strong position. So it would be a terrible development were this to happen, but what's encouraging Iran in this direction, if they are in fact going in this direction, is precisely the aggressive and illegal threats by the United States and its allies.
Is there any evidence, you talked about the nuclear issue, but what about the claims that are being made that Iran is backing militants in Iraq, Afghanistan, Lebanon, and Palestine? Is there has the administration presented any evidence to back up that claim as they impose these sanctions?
Well, okay, you've listed four countries. In two of the countries, Palestine and Lebanon, there's no doubt that Iran is a backer of both Hamas and Hezbollah. It makes no secret of that fact. The United States has declared these organizations terrorist organizations, but the thing to keep in mind is that the United States' definition of what a terrorist organization is basically an organization that's our enemy, even if they do the same kinds of things that our friends do. So, for example, there are two organizations based in Iraq which have been attacking into Iran, engaging in terrorist acts. And the United States, in fact, lists these organizations as terrorists, but seems unable or unconcerned to stop them. I'm talking about a group that's called PJAK, a Kurdish group, that the New York Times explained last week is essentially the same as the PKK, the group that's attacking into Turkey also. And while Turkey is threatening all kinds of strong military actions against Iraq, Iran has been not happy, but rather more muted in their criticisms. But these are attacks coming from Iraqi territory where the United States is the strongest military power there. So those kinds of terrorist attacks, those are okay. But the much smaller scale terrorist attacks by a Hezbollah or a Hamas, those are not okay because they're the bad guys. And if you attack Iran, that's okay. On the other hand, likewise, you can look sort of at a whole history of U.S. reaction to terrorism and see how really quite hypocritical it's been. I mean, on the one hand, you could point to something like Nicaragua during the 1980s when the International Court of Justice actually issued a ruling saying that the United States was engaged in terrorist acts against Nicaragua and demanded that they pay compensation. And, of course, the United States said, who's going to make us, and refused to. Two years ago, a former U.S. government official, Edward Peck, gave an interview in which he said that he was the deputy director in the Reagan White House deputy director of their task force on terrorism. And he was asked to come up with a definition of terrorism. And what he said is, we produced about six different definitions, and each and every case was rejected because careful reading indicated that our own country had been involved in some of those same activities. And so basically the task force had to give up because the United States engages in those same kinds of activities. So does Hamas or Hezbollah engage in terrorism? Yes, they do, and they should be criticized for it. But the scale of what they do compared to the scale of what U.S. allies do is hardly justification for singling them out. The other two countries you mentioned, Iraq and Afghanistan, where the United States claims that Iran is supporting the Taliban and providing explosively formed penetrators, the EFPs, in Iraq, there's basically no evidence for that. U.S. officials knew that those EFPs were being produced in Iraq. That is, that Iraqis had the technology to fabricate those devices. We know that Hamas has been able to produce them on their own without needing to get them from any other country. And so the claim that they could only have gotten these from Iraq is simply false. The claim about Afghanistan is even more bizarre because the government of Afghanistan includes the Shia minority in Afghanistan, and of course Iran is a Shia country, and the Taliban is a fundamentalist Sunni group whose major attitude towards the Shias of Afghanistan has been to massacre them. And so there's no love lost whatsoever between Iran and the Taliban. And the United States has produced no evidence to show any of that either.
The Bush administration is portraying these new sanctions as part of an overall approach that includes a diplomatic effort. And as I stated in the introduction, Condoleezza Rice stated on Thursday that the administration remains committed to a, quote, diplomatic solution. What is this diplomacy that she's referring to with Iran?
Well, let's just go back a little bit first. In 2003, Iran sent a message to the United States saying, we are prepared to settle all outstanding issues between us. The issue of nuclear weapons, the issue of terrorism, the issue of recognition of Israel. We're prepared to settle all these issues with you. And the United States' response was to essentially reject the message and refuse to even consider it. Okay. So if you were interested in pursuing a diplomatic path, there was the opportunity, an opportunity not just to settle one question, but to settle all the outstanding questions between the countries. But the United States rejected that and continues to reject that. Today, what Condoleezza Rice is saying, we are prepared to accept a diplomatic path, which means that Iran must stop their nuclear activities, even those legal nuclear activities. We need to take a step back here and recall that there is this nuclear non-proliferation treaty, and it was essentially a deal struck between the have countries and the have-not countries, that is, those that had nuclear weapons and those that don't. The ones that had nuclear weapons agreed that, A, they wouldn't transfer nuclear technology to anybody else, nuclear weapons technology to anybody else. Two, that they would make a good faith effort to eliminate their own nuclear weapons. And three, that they would allow and help other countries to develop nuclear technology for peaceful purposes. The have-not countries agreed that they would not try to develop nuclear weapons, but that they would be permitted to pursue peaceful nuclear uses of nuclear energy. The United States now wants to prevent Iran from pursuing peaceful uses of nuclear energy. They, of course, need to be inspected to make sure they're not diverted to other purposes, and it would certainly be legitimate to point out that because it's technologically pretty easy to switch from peaceful uses to military uses, stricter rules might be applied. But those rules can't just apply to Iran. They've got to be international rules, and changes in that system is something that the United States has not been a supporter of, in fact.
Apparently, Mohammed El-Baradei, the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, said a couple days ago that they haven't seen any concrete evidence to the effect that Iran has a clandestine secret nuclear weapons program underway.
Right. As I said, there's been nothing demonstrated that Iran is violating any of the terms of the NPT. Now there is, as I said, there is a concern, because you could say, look, a country might go ahead and develop peaceful nuclear energy and go all the way up to the edge of developing a nuclear weapon, but not doing that, and then suddenly announce, okay, now we quit the NPT and we're only a couple of months away from getting nuclear weapons. That's a problem. That's sort of a loophole in the current situation, and it's worth tightening that loophole. But the United States isn't trying to do that. The United States, in fact, is trying to selectively enforce its incorrect reading of this treaty on its enemies and on Iran in particular. And I might just note, by the way, that the obligation of the have countries, namely to make good faith efforts to reduce nuclear weapons, is not something the United States has been doing. Indeed, the Bush administration has been pushing to develop new and more horrible nuclear weapons to add to its arsenal.
Now, as I mentioned in the intro, the Guards Chief, General Mohammad Ali Jafari, one of the things he said in response to these new sanctions was that the Corps is ready to defend the ideals of the revolution now more than ever before. And I'm curious what you think will be the repercussions of these sanctions in the Iranian leadership. My understanding is that there's kind of a division in the leadership. There's hardliners, and then there's folks who are not so hardline, basically. Is this going to embolden more hardliners?
Well, it's hard to know because we don't know what effect the sanctions will have on other parties outside of Iran. That is, it's possible that someone like a corporation like Shell Oil, which has been moving to develop new oil fields in Iran, will be scared off by these U.S. sanctions from continuing with that economic activity. And if it does, that will have an impact on Iran. China has also been interested in economic ties with Iran with respect to oil, and it's not clear how they're going to respond, but they might well just ignore the sanctions. So it might be that the sanctions won't have a very dramatic economic effect, but on the other hand, it's possible they will. And if they do, then the question is the question you asked, what effect will that have on the leadership, as well as what effect will it have on the Iranian population? My sense is that most people in Iran, even people who are anti-regime, will consider these sanctions and the hardships they might lead to as not something that is attributable to the bad behavior of the Iranian government, but rather to U.S. aggressiveness. And this will, in fact, make it easier for the hardliners in Iran to strengthen their position. And that's why, in fact, various human rights groups in Iran, various pro-democracy groups in Iran, various dissidents in Iran, have felt that U.S. sanctions and U.S. heavy-handed threats don't do anything to promote democracy, but in fact strengthen the hands of the most hardline, most repressive forces in the country.
You mentioned oil and kind of maybe not the focus of what you were saying there, but it made me think of the fact that the price of oil went up after the sanctions were announced. Is there any role that oil plays in all this?
Well, sure. You know, Iran is a major oil producer, and that's in the back of any kind of analysis of what's going on there. So, for example, in all the speculation, will the United States attack Iran? One of the questions one has to think about is, well, obviously Iran can't militarily defeat the United States, but on the other hand, Iran can certainly disrupt oil traffic in the Persian Gulf, and Iranian oil will also not get to market, and this is at a time of high oil prices, and there's no doubt that that would lead to substantial shortages. And accordingly, much, much higher prices. Now, U.S. policymakers may be willing to risk that if they think, you know, they can sort of turn it around quickly. But in fact, there's really no military scenario that makes any sense, even from the point of view of an aggressive White House. That is, bombing Iran, the U.S. is certainly not going to send troops in. Bombing Iran is extremely unlikely to lead to the overthrow of the Iranian government. As I said before, in those kinds of circumstances, hardliners tend to get strengthened rather than weakened, and that would and it would lead, in fact, to a rally round the flag phenomenon with Iranians, even those who aren't enamored of the government, coming to support it. Even the thought that you could use airstrikes to knock out Iran's nuclear program is pretty unlikely, given that the Iranians have seen what happened in the past to other countries and have certainly learned from that to disperse and harden their facilities. So although the U.S. is promoting destabilization by supporting the Mujahideen-e-Khalq and the PJAK, those two terrorist groups I mentioned before, and though the U.S. is making all kinds of threats and those kinds of things, I think the likelihood of a military strike is low, not because Bush believes in international law or international justice, but because even from his own point of view, there's really no rationality to such a move. Now, could Bush act irrationally in his last months in office? That's certainly possible, and that's one reason why we need a strong anti-war movement, and we can't count on the Democratic Party to do that kind of preventive work, because they've been, giving Bush the things he wants on Iran. Frankly, I think it's unlikely that that is going to happen.
So you don't think there's imminent military action, as some senators and congresspeople have expressed concern about?
Yeah, no, I think it's important to express concern, because when you're dealing with someone who's as much a loose cannon as Bush, you never can tell what they're going to do. But from any rational point of view, it makes sort of no sense to attack, and therefore I would still rate the likelihood of that happening pretty low. But doesn't mean we shouldn't still be vigilant, and doesn't mean we shouldn't still be trying to press members of Congress who are giving Bush a blank check to stop doing so.
A full-scale ground invasion may be highly unlikely, but what about selective airstrikes?
Well, even those, as I said, I just don't see them being able to accomplish any of the U.S. purposes.
Well, maybe they wouldn't accomplish the U.S. purposes, but that doesn't mean it would stop them from doing it, necessarily.
Well, but, you do something if you think the benefits from it outweigh the costs, and it's hard to see what the benefits would be relative to the serious costs that would ensue. I mean, remember that although there is no evidence that Iran is sending in these EFTs into Iraq and so on, if Iran wanted to cause trouble for the United States in Iraq, they certainly have a lot of potential to do so. Again, Iran can't shoot down the U.S. Tomahawk missiles and so on that might be targeted on some of their facilities. So in that sense, the U.S. can get away with it. But it seems to me that Iran's asymmetric responses, whether through using its allies, Hezbollah and Hamas, or just through its own actions in Iraq, or through causing disruptions in the Persian Gulf, all those are going to cause substantial costs to the United States. And as I said, it's hard to see what benefit the United States would gain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they would when they invaded Iraq, despite the irrationality and, of course, immorality of that, they did at least get rid of Saddam Hussein. I think there's a very, very low possibility that airstrikes or missile strikes on Iran would accomplish regime change. As I say, in fact, what they would do is strengthen the regime.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Stephen Shalom. He's professor of political science at William Paterson University in New Jersey. We're talking about the recent new Bush administration sanctions against Iraq announced last Thursday by Condoleezza Rice and Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. They're the harshest imposed by the U.S. on Iran since 1979. And just one more question for you.
And the harshest imposed on pretty much anyone, because, I guess Cuba has had pretty harsh sanctions, too.
Mm-hmm.
But these are really very, very severe, that might interfere not just with Iranian companies, but foreign companies that want to do business with Iran as well.
Stephen, we just have 2 minutes left, and this is a question that probably would take a lot longer normally, but just wondering if you have any thoughts on whether or not Israel plays a role in this, these sanctions. Condoleezza Rice noted Iran's, quote, anti-Israel stance when announcing these, and I'm just wondering if you think Israel plays any role at all in these sanctions or in U.S. policy against Iran.
Well, I think Israel is a close ally of the United States' hostility towards Iran. I think Israel and the United States have see eye to eye on this. They both consider Iran their enemy. They both consider the forces that Iran supports in the region forces that are their enemies, and therefore Iran is their enemy as well. And they both would like to eliminate the Iranian regime. But I don't think either one of them has the capability to do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Stephen Shalom. Really appreciate you taking the time today to be with us.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that was Steve Shalom. He's professor of political science at William Patterson University in New Jersey. He's also a frequent contributor to Z Magazine and ZNet, and the author of several books, including a text, Which Side Are You On? An Intro to Politics.